numbers told the story they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Friday morning. Tune is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, and of course the DraftKings Network. Gil Alexander, Kelly Midland, live from Bar Canada at the D. 2 hours on the Edmonton Oilers 15 game winning streak today.
Let's go! Fire it up!
No, we're not going to do that.
Oh,
no. Minus 600 favorites yesterday, minus 650. Nice job for the Oilers. Too shy of the record. Longest streak, single season streak in NHL history. It's football day, baby. Championship game talk with Matt Brown, Chris Felica this hour. And we'll get into all things Championship Sunday in the second hour as well. Felica is actually going to join us early here, right? So Let me just vomit out some stuff. One, another Australian Open winner last night. If you're following at VSiN.com/picks, I had the over in the Medvedev-Zverev match overnight. That soared over as Medvedev came from a two sets to none deficit to win that match to join Jannik Sinner in the men's final in Melbourne. Jannik Sinner, who took down Novak Djokovic in four sets. Now, you remember, Kelly, that when you and I, did our golf and tennis rankings over a year ago. And when I did them at the time, I had Sinner as the fifth best player in the world. And I remember I took incoming. People were like, Tsitsipas is, I'm like, stop it. What's Tsitsipas? It's Sinner. And I only said it was fifth at the time because we sort of gave a nod to Nadal. We weren't fully aware of the extent of his injuries. And so I'm like, well, I'm just going to make Nadal four. But Sinner's really four at that time. Well, he is now the fourth ranked player in the world. And he finally slays the beast that is Novak Djokovic for him, which was a personal hump to get through. And so he will meet Medvedev in the final. Sinner installed, by the way, as a north of a $2 favorite. That's about where it should be based on the raw numbers, as is the women's final tonight, where Aryna Sabalenka probably shouldn't be minus 556 against Zhang Xianwen. But let's put it this way. She should be a very large favorite based on the raw data. So I don't know that I will have a play in either final, to be honest with you. This has been a great match-by-match Australian Open for this show, and it has been a boon. Now, obviously, the Iga futures hurt, but as we said, that's why the Ravens and the Niners come in to wipe those away as well. But the Australian Open match-by-match, I think we've won over 5 units in this tournament. So I don't know if I have a play in either of those, but we'll see at VSiN.com/picks. I'll dive into the women's final a little more a little later on.
Rooting for Reggie. Medvedev 10-1. Let's go, baby.
Reggie and the crew. He's got Medvedev 10-1 as part of the Christmas gift $100 future. So good luck to him on that. We shall see. But I think those are lined pretty much what they should be. Coaches yesterday, before we get to Felica. When we left a numbers game yesterday, we learned, and it always the news dump is right after a numbers game, 12 Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. Flatter taught us that years ago. And we learned that the Carolina Panthers were hiring Dave Canales as their new head coach, the former Tampa Bay Buccaneers OC. This on the heels, and we just gave it a brief mention yesterday on the show, of Brian Callahan, Bill Callahan's son, very quietly, the former Bengals offensive coordinator, being named the new Tennessee Titans coach. And so when Canales was named, and obviously the big story 2 days ago was Harbaugh, or, you know, when the Callahan Canales Kiniella, if you will, which came after the show, Canales' part after the show yesterday, I said to you, God, there's only three openings left. Like somebody's going to be left out now, because we didn't see the Callahan Canales thing happen. Like it just sort of happened real quick.
Yeah, you and I were kind of sitting here counting openings and I'm like, there's names.
Washington, Atlanta, Seattle. You still got Vrabel. You still got Belichick. And then we learned yesterday Raheem Morris is the new head man of the Atlanta Falcons. And so I think we know who the odd guy out is now. It's going to be Bill Belichick. And Seattle and Washington now with the only openings. Washington rumored to be all over Ben Johnson, the Lions offensive coordinator. And we'll see which way Seattle goes. Maybe it's Vrabel, but they don't have any interest, either team really, in Belichick. So Bill Belichick, who will be 72 years old next year when the season starts, you think about it in that way. It's like, well, yeah, I guess who wants a 72-year-old, and again, not being ageist, but just in terms of a runway of how long you could have him as coach, a 72-year-old curmudgeonly pain in the butt guy who just came off a 4-13 season, who's probably going to hire his flunkies, Matt Patricia and Joe Judge, to come with him.
Yeah.
That's not really that appealing, is it?
Yeah, no, no. We were kind of texting about it yesterday, too. I'm wondering how much of the similar kind of Josh McDaniels situation played out.
Him, too.
Well, like, we saw with Antonio Pierce, like, what, he scolded Antonio Pierce for using the Giants' win over the Patriots as an example? Like, at a certain point, the Patriot way runs out when you're not in the Patriots building. And you just wonder how some of these interviews went with Bill.
I can't imagine he's that awesome. I just can't. Oh boy, this was exciting. Thanks for the time, Bill. Ladies and gentlemen, he is the Bear. He's at Fox Sports. He does the Bear Bets Pod, both college and pro football versions. Chris Velika joins us now. How you doing, Chris?
I'm kind of upset. I'm actually very dejected right now. I thought when you were talking about coaching news, I thought you were going to be leading off with the announcement that Jurgen Klopp will be stepping down from Liverpool.
Oh yes, I was
at the end of this year. So I had to do a calendar check this morning to make sure it was not April 1st. So yeah, for Liverpool supporters like myself, that was quite a jolt this morning to a season which right now has them top the Premier League by 5 points and in the mix to win FA Cup, Carabao Cup, and to live in Europa. So that was a that was surprising news to wake up to this morning.
You okay, man? Well, your level of shock was like 10, 11 on the on the amplifier?
Yeah, I knew it was ultimately going to come. And his deal, I think, had 2 years left on it. But, hey, he said he's burnt out. He doesn't have the energy left to do it. So you've got to appreciate that. And there's only one to steal a line from one of the greatest movie characters of all time. Jake from Major League, there's only one thing left to do, go out and win the whole damn thing. So hopefully that's what Liverpool can do.
Kelly, I don't know if you know this, but Farmington, Connecticut settled in 1640. That's just bleeding into my head as I look at Chris this morning. He's got this little thing on the back.
You're lucky to get this set location this morning.
Yeah, thank you so much.
It was downstairs, not upstairs.
For those watching at VSiN.com and the DraftKings Network, YouTube TV, you know what I'm talking about. All right, Championship Sunday, Chris. Let's start with Baltimore and Kansas City. Kelly and I will go through our thoughts through this show. Matt Brown will have his. What are yours on the first game of two Sunday?
Everyone I think is going to be on Baltimore in this game, laying the points. That would be my assumption, and I can't blame them. Like, I don't like the game at all from a side standpoint. I think you could see Kansas City's defense step up and play well. The two bets that I made in this game were Patrick Mahomes under 243.5 passing yards, because I think with the injuries that Kansas City has, maybe on the offensive line with Tooney, and you're going to find things a lot more difficult against that Ravens defense and those linebackers who can cover Kelsey. And with Kyle Hamilton will probably be on taking Kelsey out the entire time as well. So I don't think you're going to have very many wide receivers open. Are you going to get MBS to catch two balls again like he did last week? Who the hell knows? So yeah, I played Mahomes under 243.5 and over 25.5 rushing yards. I think potentially a lot of those play calls that are passes are going to turn into undesigned runs, scrambles by Mahomes, because he has nobody open. And I brought this up yesterday on the pod with Will, Sammy P, and Jeff. Like, and you don't have to answer the question now. Maybe you can tackle it later. But like, does it feel maybe like the Chiefs are a little bit fool's gold? You beat a depleted Dolphins team that had a bunch of injuries in that brutally cold weather. You went against the Bills defense that easily could have had Daryl Talley and Fred Smirlis and Cornelius Bennett and Phil Hansen playing last week with all the injuries they had. Like, this kind of feels like where it's going to end for Kansas City, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's the Mahomes factor, right? It's what muddies everything. By the way, excellent knowledge of the 90s Bills AFC dynasty defense, by the way, there. Smirless even before that. But the, I think, you know, we've had a couple people this week, both in podcast and radio form, say that they think the number should have been Ravens by 6 or even more, but that Mahomes singularly just muddies this enough where you cannot pull the trigger, despite the fact that it's only 4. I think that's kind
If he gets this team to the Super Bowl, like when are they not going to get, because you know they're going to address the wide receiver position in the offseason.
Right. And when, and again, when Wishnev was here and the Chiefs were playing the Raiders, we were at Caesars watching that game where Mahomes was just, you know, the Raiders weren't even blitzing and they were getting to him. And the times they weren't, he was just sitting back there, like looking for receivers all day. We said at that moment, like if you had said to us at that moment, hey, you know, this team is going to the Super Bowl, we would have laughed, you know? And so how quickly the recency bias sets in. And he is Michael Jordan, so he deserves that kind of, you know, rep. What about game two?
Yeah, the thing I feel most confident about in the second game, I find the Lions team total of over 20.5 minus 120 over at DraftKings. That's at least what it was when I played it. That's the thing I feel most confident about. Like either path this game takes, either a 49ers are healthy, Debo plays, the weather is great, the offense is humming, they're going to score points. The Lions are going to play catch up against the 49ers defense that might not be very good. After all, we saw them have trouble stopping Aaron Jones last week. We saw them give up a bunch of big plays to the air again. So I think the Lions are going to score points. And on the other hand, we might run into a situation where Debo doesn't play and the Niners offense is all out of sync again. And maybe the Lions are looking to extend and protect the lead. So yeah, Lions team total over 20.5 is something that I like the most. I know all those splits out there about home, road and outdoor, but I'm not going to lay much credence to that, especially being you're going to be playing in about 70 degree clear temperatures. And I played Brock Purdy over 272.5 passing yards as well, because I think with the way the Lions can stop the run, I think you're going to see Christian McCaffrey use a little bit more in the passing game as well. Very disappointed, by the way, you did not play college basketball coach truck level with after we got the vintage Tommy Lloyd experience.
The vintage Tommy Lloyd experience. Chris, thank you for joining us again prior to your hibernation in the Caribbean. We appreciate it.
Arizona is an unserious basketball team. Cameroon, Nigeria, under 2.5 tomorrow.
Matt Brown next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Start your morning with a daily dose of winning strategies, insider tips, and the latest buzz with the free VSiN daily newsletter. In today's newsletter, featured
the ultimate list of championship Sunday trends.
You said that like the movie voiceover guy. One man. Get expert analysis and the latest odds delivered straight to your inbox absolutely free. That's at VSiN.com/newsletter to subscribe. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin live from Maracanada here at the D, the Barrage, downtown Las Vegas. We are joined each and every Friday by this gentleman. He is the host of the All Angles Football Betting Podcast and, of course, co-host of The Handle, which he does with our buddy Mike Somich. We can call him our buddy now, right? He was on. We did a little equal time earlier this week.
I would say BFFs,
yeah.
Wait.
Yeah, unlike this guy, Matt Brown, everybody.
What is?
Yeah, we had him on the show, and
y'all cheated on me.
I don't want you to feel jealous or anything.
Yeah, we had him on Monday, and then we just told him to keep coming back all week. So yeah. Right. So he was on every day. This
he's a little hurt by it.
Guess what? Guess what? Well, this is the last time I'm doing a show with y'all at Bar Canada then here at the D.
Wow.
Last time.
I like that you came in off air. Your first thing you said was like, wow, been a minute since I seen Djokovic get his butt handed to him like that last night. Last time an Australian Open featured a final without Djokovic, Federer, or Nadal. Any guesses? Give me a year.
It had to have been. The COVID year. One of the COVID years, right? A COVID year, 2020.
2005. You remember when Murat Safin beat Leighton Hewitt?
Yes, obviously.
I was closer.
Yes.
Yeah, Kelly got 2002.
Yes.
I'm sorry, you went over, Kelly, so you lose both showcases.
Yeah. I said this before we went on, but it's like, you know, Andy Murray's body failed him along the way. Then Federer's body failed him along the way. And then Nadal's body is now failing him currently. And we've just seen Djokovic been able to weather the storm, but he's just old. I mean, like
36.
You used to be old at like 26 in tennis. Like right. It was like you got to 26. You're like, this guy's over the hill.
It's the biggest thing. When we were kids, if you were 26, you were ancient.
Yeah,
were done.
Done. Like you were on the down slope of your career.
Those three guys, and Murray being the fourth, ruined everything for everybody. It's like you say about Herbert and Burrow. Yeah. Like you can't draft quarterbacks like this every year. It just doesn't happen.
It was interesting last night, though. I mean, you look. We say it's passing on the torch type stuff, right? I mean, you see a 22-year-old go out there and give it to the old guy, you know, and that's what happened.
We'll see. I mean, I'm sure we haven't heard the last of
it. No, for sure. But it's just, I'm going to have to come to grips now with like, okay, the other three are pretty much gone.
Yeah.
We are now at 36 with him. It is weird. There's a very near future in which the four are gone. Like it is, that's it is right. Officially gone.
That's right. We're entering a new world. Carlitos and Sinner will be the guys. And then Medvedev's still the guy that no one ever seems to want to give credit to, but he's top three in the world and everything. And again, both of me, if you missed that, Sabalenka, prohibitive $6 favorite in the women's final tonight. And then Sinner appropriately as well, favorite minus 245 over Medvedev in the men's final of tennis's first Grand Slam. Let's talk NFL Championship Sunday, sir.
Yes, I got thoughts.
All right, let's start with Baltimore hosting the Chiefs, the AFC Championship, 3 p.m. Eastern, 12 noon Pacific, with the Ravens now 4-point consensus favorites.
Yeah, this was interesting. I thought we were probably going to get stuck at 3.5, and the fours coming up, and the support for the Ravens is interesting to me. So let's go like full season statistics here, and we always do the whole thing of you can only play who you play. And I'm not discrediting the Ravens defense whatsoever, but there are a lot of people who go, I mean, look at this defense over the course of the whole season. I agree. However, okay, you got C.J. Stroud's first start, right? Then they lost to Gardner Minshew in week 3. You got Dorian Thompson-Robinson in week 4. Kenny Pickett, who eventually ends up losing his job to Mason Rudolph in week 5. Tannehill in week 6, who got hurt in the game, and you get Malik Willis. You got the Josh Dobbs version of Arizona Cardinals in week 8. Okay, they blew a 14-point lead to what ended up being an injured Deshaun Watson, who didn't play a game the rest of the season against the Browns. Then they had Joe Burrow in the game in which he got hurt, and they got Jake Browning.
This is pretty incredible. Right? I don't know if I knew all of this. Yes.
Like, and so, I mean, again, the season-long defensive season, this Ravens defense is great. It is a very, very, very good defense. But
no, you just said they suck. Everybody heard.
No, if you just blindly look at the numbers,
backtrack now.
That's one of the things. If you blindly look at the numbers, and you just be like, "Oh my God, look at this defense and how awesome they were over the course of the year." It's like, well, yes, and they were definitely good because it's still NFL players they're playing against.
That is pretty stunning.
There was a fortunate stretch literally all the way through week 11, right? And then, yes, they played some good ones down the stretch for sure. Stafford, Purdy, Tua. They got a banged up version of Trevor Lawrence down the stretch as well. So, like, it's a very, very good team. And obviously, the advanced stats will still show that it's a very good defense. But taking context, the stuff that doesn't, you know, if you look at points per game allowed or yards per game allowed or any of those things that don't take opponent into factor, right? Like they don't take in who you actually played and at what point in the season, those can be a little misleading. I just wanted to paint that picture for people out there who just go, man, they only gave up X amount of points this year and they only gave up this amount of yards this year. I'm like, okay, you got Dorian Thompson-Robinson, you know, you got Malik Willis along the way. I mean, there were some soft spots.
It's worth saying.
Yeah,
for sure.
There were some soft spots along the way.
I had Cleve T.A. on the Megapod, the Beating the Book Megapod with Todd Wishnev and Will Hill. One of the great Twitter follows there is, and I'll bring him up more than once on this show, largely because he corroborated my Monday feelings on both games. So I'm like thrilled to back it up with what he's saying. And on this game, I don't have a play. And I am sort of the mind that, again, acknowledging what you said, Baltimore, listen, that Patrick Mahomes is the factor that muddies this, right? Like if there was no such thing as this, obviously it wouldn't be here if it wasn't for him. But I'm just saying, if he was in any way not the Michael Jordan of this sport, I'd fire on the Ravens. But he is so good, right, that it gives you pause. And one of Cleve's big things in giving him pause on this game, too, is that, you know, one of the big strengths of Baltimore's defense, Mike McDonald's defense, is that he is probably going to be able to mitigate Travis Kelce with Kyle Hamilton. And conversely with Steve Spagnuolo, the one sort of, you know, the kryptonite for Lamar Jackson is that from an EPA standpoint, he's one of the worst quarterbacks when you just throw the kitchen sink at him, when they're in cover zero. And so I think that, you know, he was bringing up both of those things from both defensive coordinator standpoint, and that so there's enough there, the doubt on both ends, right? Mitigating Kelce, you know, being able to scheme against Lamar in that way, that it just took him off. And just our guessing lines, Malcolm Gladwell blink instinct was to just stay away from this as well. And so what did you end up with here?
I eventually ended up playing the 4. I wasn't going to, and then when it moved to 4, to me, we're looking at a deal. You just brought up the factor, basically, for the bet for me, which is the Patrick Mahomes I'm getting 4 points with the greatest quarterback of all time situation in which I'm looking and saying, okay, let's say everything is kind of going right for the Ravens in this game and they find themselves as, with a 10-point lead in the fourth quarter, which I'm sure they would love. Well, I mean, a garbage touchdown and I'm covering. Like, I'm still covering, right? Like, with Patrick Mahomes, who has time and time and time again, even with the ridiculous lack of resources, been able to find a way to drive the ball down the field against all odds, which... Please just pay T. Higgins in the offseason. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. Like, just give all the money to T. Higgins and get him a real receiver again. And, like, let's see what this guy can do. But it's that was kind of the definitive factor for me where I'm looking like is a double-digit lead is still in cover territory for me with Patrick Mahomes at quarterback. And, you know, one of the deals, it's going to be a great chess match, right? So both of these teams, some of the highest man defensive percentages in the NFL. Like, and so we know what happens whenever you run a bunch of man defense. It gives these quarterbacks that are prone to taking off an opportunity to take off because you're turning your back to them and then they see that and then they take off running. So will they alter? Will either one of these guys alter how they play defense, you know, in this game? Will we see more zone from the Chiefs? Will we see more zone from the Ravens? And people are going like, why the Ravens? Patrick Mahomes is sneaky, sneaky good at running the football. Like it's like he's the most opportunist. So it's not like the God-given talent like Lamar has or whatever, but, and Josh Allen and stuff, but he's like one of the most opportunistic quarterback rushers that we've like ever seen. He will
It's that third and eight, the pocket collapses, he takes one step forward and it's like, oh, there's nobody in front of me, let me go easily go pick up a first down.
Cleve did take the over on Patrick Mahomes rushing yards, by the way.
I mean, Felica mentioned it last segment. Yeah. I think, and you're kind of hitting it right here, Matt, like I think the over on both the guys could be a good play.
You look, you look at Mahomes and like you just mentioned, there's no one who's more situationally aware than that dude, especially from a rushing perspective. Like, we scream and yell at the television all the time, like, how do you cut your route off a yard before the sticks? And, like, how do you whatever? And that is not Patrick Mahomes. Like, if it is third and seven, he knows exactly how to get 7.5 yards, and he will find the 7.5 yards. And so I do think, one, I like the Mahomes rushing prop as well. And then I also look at the Lamar side of things, and, you know, You're going to have a ton of design runs for him. This is just the way that this team worked. There was one team in the 2023 version of the NFL that ran the ball more than they passed it. One NFL team, and it was the Ravens, right? And like, so it's going to be, that's what they do. They run the ball. They're going to continue to run the ball. I think that Lamar ends up running it a ton, and maybe from a scramble standpoint, even more than that.
So you did take the Chiefs with the points in the end?
Yeah, I did.
You did. Okay, just to clarify. Niners and the Lions will do that, and hypothetical Super Bowl matchups with Matt Brown coming back.
The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, VSiN app, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. How are you taking us in this morning? We appreciate it. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin, producer number 9. So much more than a producer. Is this guy going to stop winning jackpots at some
point? Incredible. I'm so distracted right now.
You think he can hear us?
So
literally 7 feet away from us.
I think intelligently he's hitting and moving down a machine every time, so he's getting a little bit closer to us every time too.
He has won 2 jackpots, as you can very well hear with the music in the background. He came over in the middle and I started asking him how much he won. He downplayed how much he won, just to let you know. And he seemed like he was getting a root canal while waiting for the music to stop and the money to stop coming in. So
you got to get the hand pay every time you hit over 2,000.
Hand pay, sorry. So he's got to go downstairs.
But he's hit over that.
He has the joy of a doorknob while he's doing this. He's not very excited about it.
It's so distracting for someone like me. I'm just a gambler. I love
it. It's amazing. He's clearly of the Randy, as you said off air, clearly of the Randy McKay DNA strain.
Yes.
Where it's like, oh, I do this all the time.
Well, because I was shocked after we finally heard the first noise go off. I turned around and saw I'm still sitting down. I just can't imagine. You know, like, you know me, I'd be like, all right, like, time to hit the strip club or something. Let's go.
That music will not leave my head, by the way. That melody.
You know what? Wow. You know what, Gil? I'm gonna guess that by the end of the next segment we hear it again.
I think you're probably right.
That's my guess.
You might be onto something, this guy. I would just want to point out with the so Matt Brown, and God love him, so he just gave a great speech on why he is taking the Lions. I just want to bring up the point counterpoint of this, right?
Yeah. Okay. Great. Because I heard like a minute of that. Yeah.
Oh, because you were so distracted by it. Kelly's got a little ADD. Yesterday he was watching that documentary the whole time we were on the show. What is it? Hustlers and.
Yeah, was it and Hustlers, Gamblers, and Thieves?
I'll shout out Cleve TA, who is one of the best, CLEVTA, one of the great Twitter X, pardon me, football follows there is, does everything so objectively and so logically. But he was on the Megapod. We have all of our finest regular season Beating the Book Megapod guests on as many as we can during the postseason. And he was kind enough to come on this last week with Will Hill, Todd Wishnev, and I. And he also does not have a play on the side of the Ravens-Chiefs game for reasons we got into earlier. He is all about the Niners, which was my instinct on Monday as well. Mm. He has them -6.5. He got them earlier in the week. I have them -7. I also took an alt line. I know I did on the Niners. Lions fans are probably not surprised. I'm big friends with the Lions fans this year. But I have the Niners -16.5 at +227 as well, because I do feel like this is going to harken back to our childhood days where in championship games, blowouts are a possibility. And I think we're staring at one here. And listen, I think the Niners escaped their scare last week, and boy, did they escape. That was an absolute escape job against the Green Bay Packers. He points out, Cleve does, a couple things about this matchup. One, the Detroit Lions offensively, no quarterback exploits the middle of the field quite as well as Jared Goff, and to quite the extent that Jared Goff does, as opposed to going outside. The Niners happen to be very strong in the middle with Fred Warner, with Dre Greenlaw.
I was going to say, it feels like we've seen a few times this year, Fred Warner or Dre Greenlaw just, hey, I'm in the middle of the field, interception, cool.
Yeah, and then the comps to who the Lions have played with that sort of characteristic on defense, Chicago leaps to mind. Mm. They didn't really play well. Right. So there is already some comps on that. The other sort of
I mean, the Ravens.
The Ravens being another one. That's exactly right. So there's that. Secondly, there's the, you know, there's no rain. So that's not going to affect Brock Purdy here on the other side. One of the other big things is, OK, well, that's great. But listen, the Niners defense gives up a ton of yards. And obviously with Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery, the Lions have the personnel to exploit that. Well, while we were doing the Megapod, because Todd actually brought it up, he's like, okay, yeah, that's all great, but what about this? Cleve actually looked it up while we were doing the Megapod. So which are the teams that have had a greater than 50% success rate in the running game against the Niners? Those teams are Washington, believe it or not, had the highest success rate, near 60% success rate against the Niners defense. The others, Seattle, Tampa Bay, and the Rams. Now, what were the results of those games? They beat Washington by 17. The Niners beat Seattle by 12. They beat Tampa Bay by 13. And they beat the Rams by 7. The game that the Rams won was week 17, where it didn't matter for the Niners.
Which is almost impressive that it's that high of a winning margin when you're literally talking about the teams that ran the ball best against
them. That's right. The point of that being, so for all those, because we've heard it, listen, we've all talked ad nauseum about these two games, much like we will for 2 weeks about the Super Bowl. So you try to think of all the different angles that we haven't spoken about. One of those that we've heard from, you know, multiple guests, not only on this show, but I'm sure throughout the network, throughout all mainstream media, is, you know, that's the real Achilles heel. But the point being that you can withstand 4 to 5 yards per rush in modern day NFL, and it absolutely doesn't kill you. It doesn't. What you're trying to avoid are the big chunk pass plays.
Yeah.
And the Niners are actually set up well against the Lions in that respect, as we just talked about. So again, and I mentioned this in the previous segment, what horrible luck for the Lions in their two NFC championship appearances that we've been alive for, or that some of us have, you know, some of us even remember, some of us who were even there at the other one. because I was, to end up playing these two behemoth teams 30 plus years apart.
Yeah, I keep going back to in this game, much like I did with Green Bay before we were breaking that game down, okay, if you can run the ball and establish, because the pass defense is so good, you don't want to be in obvious pass situations against the Niners, so what's the easiest way to do that? Actually gain some yardage running the ball. And you saw Aaron Jones do that effectively early. And then it was, everybody went crazy over what he did to the Niners, but he had the one long run.
He did.
And you take that out of it, and then you really go and break down his stats, and you're like, all right, well, they kind of ran the ball okay on them. Like, they ran it a lot.
By the way, that run, when he had that run, that was the moment of many moments, but that was maybe the biggest moment where you thought, wow, the Niners are going to lose this football game.
Right. Yeah. And kind of what I'm saying here is, we talked about this on Monday, but it was me watching that game. It was, okay, between the rain with Purdy, Debo getting hurt, then seemingly throwing off one of the greatest offensive play callers in the NFL's entire plan for the game, yeah, and him not being able to recover. And then the 49ers still won the game.
And they still won the game.
That's the thing I keep going back to.
Well, so let's go to that Debo point.
Yeah.
Because I have been among those who say, and maybe I'm louder than most on this, where I'm like, hey, something does happen to the Niners. Like, as elite as this team is, when they lose one of the cogs of their machine on offense, they seem to fall off a cliff. And so let's take Debo, because Debo's obviously the one in question here. You know, I came out of that game saying, wow, like, when they lose Debo, they seem to fall off a cliff. Here it is again. What is it about the makeup of this team? And the answer, the knee-jerk reaction to that question is, well, because Debo does so many different things to that offense.
Yeah.
Well, again, this is all the beating the book megapod. I'm sorry to promote it 100 times here, but we were talking about that, and I brought that up, and Cleve was like, well, I got something to say about that later in the show. And what he did say was, it's actually a little bit masked in the sense that, yes, in this past game, Debo Williams was out. Their performance dropped off. This is me speaking now. But there was rain involved, and Brock Purdy was having trouble wiping off his hand during the game. But typically, when Debo didn't play this year, you know what else happened? You know who else didn't play? Trent Williams didn't play. Mm. So there's a bit of fallacy to that, totally, where it's like, yeah, it's actually not Debo.
Yeah.
It was that Debo was out at the same time Trent Williams is. And maybe besides Christian McCaffrey, Trent Williams is the single most important player on that offense. To which I quipped, of course, boy, you know who could use Trent Williams? The Washington Commodores. But we know how that went. But that's, I thought that was a great push back to that notion, sure, as well.
Absolutely.
Where it's like, nah, that's actually not what was at play. So, and we just looked at it three or four different ways there, where it comes up Niners every which way. So I just really believe that this is, and again, sorry, Lions fans, I know you hate me already, but it's like, by the way, I was like, what, do you still have them ninth? Or no, they said 10th. I was like, no, actually, I had them as high as ninth this year.
They've gone up to fourth for
my
you.
Response was, nah, I'm dead last now. Dead last. Four out of four. Yeah. That's how I see it going. Yeah. I have the Niners -7. I wasn't fortunate enough to get the -6.5. But as it was ticking towards 7.5 yesterday while we were on air, I grabbed a remaining 7. And then I do have the alt spread of -16.5. That was the one I chose to play at +227. But I could have gone anywhere with it. I could have gone -9.5 at plus money, short plus money. But that's the one I chose.
I mean, look, I think that's, we hit on it a bit yesterday with crack. But yeah, I think if you see that big of a difference between teams, mix in some alts for sure. Yeah, I laid 6.5 one of the days we were on air, and we saw it. I think Circa had it up here. So I did hit the 6.5 of the Niners. I mean, I'm in the same camp as you. I keep going back to that game last week of how much went wrong, and they still won the game. And I don't really know that there's that, after what we saw the end of the season with the Packers, I don't really know that there's that big of a difference between the Packers and the Detroit Lions. And like, that is, it's probably, I'm probably crediting more the Packers than taking anything away from the Lions. But still, I think they have the ability to do that. We'll get to the Chiefs-Ravens game later. But yeah, I laid 6.5 here. I do have a teaser from last week with the Niners involved to close out. And then I'm
thinking about one more bet that's going to involve both teams that I'll talk about in the last segment.
Okay.
Back to it.
Didn't mention that Dr. Bob and Jason Weingartner are on the show today, but they are. Dr. Bob's thoughts on Championship Sunday, that's on the other side. Pioneer in the business, or he objects to that term. He likes to be called a legend. No, he actually said that one. It's a numbers game at Visa, the sports betting network. That's next.